Vlogging the Boys presents Cowboys Radio with Rabs and McCool. Here are your hosts, Rabble Rouser and Landon McCool.
Hello, howdy, and welcome to another edition of Vlogging the Boys Cowboys Radio. I'm Landon McCool, and with me as always is Rabble Rouser. Rabble, week one, one win against the New York Giants. How you feeling, my man?
Oh my God, dude, I'm still exhausted from that victory. You know, I had sort of vowed, because it was week one, and, you know, week one, as we've talked about, yields more false positives than any other week in the NFL season. And I had sort of vowed that I was just going to be cool and just kind of sit there and, you know, objectively chill and watch the game and have a little snack and maybe a beer, you know. And by the 5 minutes into the fourth quarter, that plan was completely out the window. I was pacing back and forth in my living room. And the thing is, the living room is right next to the bedroom, and my wife went to sleep early because she wasn't feeling well. So she was asleep by then. So when they finally did drive and score, I had the most awesome silent freak out.
Wow. Ever seen. That's awesome, because that's exactly what happened to me too.
Seriously?
Well, no, not exactly, but basically the exact same thing, where I had the silent freak out because it was right as my wife was putting our baby to sleep. And so she opened the door to the hallway that leads back to the baby's room right as Tony's throwing the pass. So I jump midair, somehow have the wherewithal to sense that my wife had come in the room and that I needed to be quiet. And when I landed back on the ground, I go, yay! Like, just as quietly as could be. I mean, I was losing my mind. I'll tell you what, you know, one of the hardest things about doing this podcast, honestly, is that, you know, we do it 4 or 5 days after the games happened. And so sometimes, you know, especially after watching the film so many times and watching the game tape over, it becomes an analytical process, and I lose kind of the emotion that was tied to my feeling for it, at least towards the result of the game. So sometimes I feel like I have to, you know, kind of reattach that. But this week was completely different, because it was definitely one of those things where all throughout the week I kept on remembering it and felt that sense of emotion like all over again. And it was just so amazing to watch Tony do that at the end of the game and just, you know, completely march down the field. It must have been just so demoralizing to be a Giants fan and watch that happen for, like, you know, what is this, the six games in a row we've beaten them?
Five in a row. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's been such a great week just kind of celebrating it, and I'm fired up for Eagles week. So speaking of, what do we need to do to get ready for this Eagles game? What do we got in the show today?
Well, we're going to welcome in Blogging the Boys head honcho Dave Halperin, who's going to join us to talk about what we were just chatting about, the Cowboys' nerve-wracking win over the Giants. And then after that, we'll welcome Brandon Gauton from Bleeding Green Nation, the SB Nation Eagles site, into the studio to chat about the Eagles' offseason, their week one loss to the Falcons, thank you, Falcons, and their prospects going forward.
That sounds like good stuff. But before we get into that stuff, I want to make sure that you and I get a chance to actually talk in, you know, a little bit more about the game. So why don't you go ahead and let's just have a brief chat. Give me your thoughts about what you thought the offense looked like overall.
Well, you know, I think during the game, the narrative that I was feeling, you know, you were talking earlier about how emotion sometimes dictates our view of what actually transpired on the field. And during the game, I think the frustration from being behind and the frustration with the turnovers and that kind of thing colored my sense of how effective the offense was. And I think they struggled a little in the first half, but I think in the second half they were really good. And I actually spent some time last night looking at the offense in the second half, watching the game again. And you know, they had that one drive in the second half where Romo threw a nice pass to Street, and you know, the guy, you know, guy hit him, popped the ball out, landed right in another guy's hand, and he took it down to the one. Sort of freak bang bang play. Yes, Street should hang on, but also, you know, the dude hit him exactly where in right spot to jar the ball loose. I don't know that it's even a completion. You know, if it doesn't land right in a guy's hands, etc. Sort of a weird freaky play. But that drive aside, every other one of their drives, they moved the ball really well. They scored three touchdowns. And, you know, that first drive, their first score, when they, I guess they got the ball down 16-6 after the Giants had opened with a field goal in their opening drive of the second half. You know, they moved the ball down with great alacrity and you know, good tempo for the most part, and a nice mixture of run and pass. You know, Joe Randall picked up couple nice gainers to get them in a very manageable third down later, and of course he had that wonderful like 26-yard pass, I think, where, you know, had the one-handed catch and then finished the run nicely by hitting a guy as he went out of bounds, which I liked. And then a couple other runs where Joe Randall had like 5-yard gainers, a nice solid runs, you know, good runs to set up manageable situations on second down. So I thought that in that drive in particular, the Cowboys offense began to resemble the offense we saw in 2014. Obviously, they had to go away from that when they were down 10 with eight minutes or less remaining in the game. But, you know, I think there were some promising things that happened once the offense began to kind of shake some of the cobwebs off. You know, and if we think about this just real quick, and then I'll let you you know, join in with your, I would say 2 cents, but your opinions are worth far more than 2 cents, my friend. with your $20 worth. You know, in many ways, it reminded me of the opening game last year against the 49ers, you know, where they were kind of stumbling a little bit. There were some, you know, very difficult turnovers that put them way behind the eight ball, that were returned for touchdowns, those sort of cheap, easy scores on fumbles, that kind of thing. And then on the offense woke up in the second half against the 49ers. Of course, they had dug themselves in a little bit more of a hole, and the 49ers are probably a better team, and that team wasn't as good because Romo wasn't as good. But it reminded me a lot of that kind of game where you stumble out of the gate. There's a lot of the rust, you know, the sort of sleep caught in your eyes from training camp and a preseason in which you don't play any of your elite players. And so, you know, you said earlier to start this whole thing off, they're 1-0, and to be 1-0 after a little bit of a stumbly first half in which some things that can kill you and create a loss happened makes me pretty happy.
Yeah, including, you know, injury to Dez Bryant, which, you know, I'm sure we'll get to later. But yes, I mean, overcoming a lot to come back and win the game was impressive. You know, my $20 or 2 cents or however much you're paying for it is basically that I thought, you know, I've did a lot of studying on the offensive line and the run game, and I think the offensive line for the most part looked pretty good, and even when Bernardo came in, he looked okay, definitely better than he had in the preseason. I was actually you know, I thought that Randall's performance was pretty decent. I think there was definitely some times early on where he looked a little bit hesitant, and maybe actually the opposite, maybe where he wasn't patient to wait for the hole to go develop and then go through it. I think at times he was pressing a little bit, but once he started to feel it and get into the rhythm of the game, he did a really good job. And there's a couple of things that I think we should point out. I mean, he ran for 4.1 a carry, which is, you know, was average, basically, which a lot of people, you know, are kind of upset about. But honestly, he did that without the benefit of getting the opportunity to feast against a tired defense in the fourth quarter, which I'm sure, you know, if the Cowboys had taken care of business, if all the other players around Randall had taken care of business and held on to the ball, you know, we probably would have scored, obviously, probably we should have definitely scored a lot more points, which would have allowed for him to kind of been able to run against an exhausted defense that wouldn't have been able to stop it. And I think that's probably would have helped his numbers a little bit. But if you watch the actual plays, he didn't have any negative runs, which is a huge part of this scheme. I mean, making sure that you're getting to the line of scrimmage and beyond. I mean, I think the shortest carry he had was for 2 yards. He may have had a no gainer, but you know, I think those are really important things. Another thing that stuck out to me specifically was that, and Joey Ikes and I were talking about this morning, is that of his, I think, 12 or 13, no, he had 15 carries, right? I think of those, probably 10 of them were wide zone plays, either to the left or the right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're running a lot more wide zone, which is a great, you know, fit for his skill set, and he obviously ran it very well. I think, you know, I just loved the offense in general, frankly. I mean, they did a great job of getting Escobar involved. They got Dunbar really involved. We finally saw the emergence of Dunbar as a player and could finally point to, you know, something as, hey, this is why we don't cut this guy, right? Because, I mean, he's so dangerous out of the backfield and just running routes. And I think this is really going to come into play. Escobar and Dunbar's load increase is really going to come into play when we play the Eagles, and really just in general while Dez is out. I think these two guys are going to become more, a bigger part of the game plan, and I think they will each kind of take different aspects of Dez's kind of fit in the offense and divide up that job between a couple different guys. Obviously, T. Will take some of that responsibility, but I wouldn't be surprised to see more Escobar, more Dunbar. And it's just great to see that they finally have added a dimension in Dunbar of having a safety valve who can actually hurt the defense. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, that we always used to talk about with Murray is that, oh, he's a great receiver out of the backfield. Well, he's a great catcher out of the backfield, but he wasn't making anybody miss if he caught the ball on the flat. I mean, I can't even tell you how many times we saw him, the dump pass to Murray, and all he had to do was beat one guy and he could get 12 yards, and he, tries to run the guy over and gets tackled. And it's like with Dunbar, he's making four and five guys miss. He's getting 40 yards. I mean, if you go back and look at that last the last drive, I mean, Dunbar was more than half the drive. He had two different catches that were, I think, for totals of like 45 of the 70 yards that they drove were from Dunbar dump passes where he just skirted up the field. No one was protecting the middle because no one thought they would go in the middle, and he just skirted his way up the field. I love seeing him involved. I love the way that they used the running backs initially. We didn't really get a chance to see, for what we would be a full game if we had the lead, but I love the way that they were mixing them up initially, and I'm excited to see where it goes from here, frankly. That's it for me on the offense. Do you have anything else before we move on to the defensive side of the ball?
Just a quick comment about Dunbar to add to what you were saying. A couple of years ago, I might have written somewhere. I actually have two comments. That Dunbar was the most explosive player on the Cowboys' offense, and that includes Dez Bryant. And what I meant by that is not that he's the most dominant player or anything like that. I don't believe that. But I think, one of the things we saw on Sunday was his ability to get the ball with someone trailing and just to leave that guy in the dust. Mm-hmm. And once he gets the ball in the open field, he's very dangerous because he's really quick and he accelerates really quickly. The other thing I wanted to talk about the running game is I did a little study of times when they gave the ball to Joe Randall on run plays on first down and then again on second down, because that in many ways was the kind of bread and butter last year. Murray first down, Murray second down, set up the easy convertible third down situation, especially early in the season.
Yes.
And so there were, I think, four of those situations, and twice he got us into third and five, not great, and twice he got us into third and two, pretty darn good. So I think that we might have seen more of those first down Randall, second down Randall, if the score had been a little bit more manageable. I mean, remember also they got the ball, at the end of the first half, on the play where Cromartie returned the fumble. And it wasn't a two-minute situation yet, but it was like a three-minute situation.
Yeah.
So they weren't going to be running it then. So three of their drives, the run game really wasn't a possibility and balance wasn't really a possibility. So, I'm hoping for more games where the score is manageable or where they're winning at the end to get a better handle on this run game. But there were some indications, I think, that they're not going to have the game, the same running games they're going to as they had last year, but they're going to have one that can accomplish some of the same things.
Well, that's exactly it. Is that I think third and five is not great, but it's also not terrible.
Go ahead.
I think that's kind of the thing that as I've adjusted my expectation is that this is a different offense than last year, and that if we can get to more third and five and better, then we're going to be okay. It's getting the third and longers where, I mean, not that we'll have problems because we have a lot of weapons, but I think third and five is what your minimum threshold for expectation is. And you're right, like getting there is not an A or a B, even it's a C, but it's not failing either. And I think that is kind of my threshold for whether or not the run game is working is well, how many third and six or longers are we doing? You know, because that's really a failure at that point, whether it's through penalty or, you know, lack of yardage on first and second down.
Right. Okay. So thoughts about the defense. What did you think about how Rod Marinelli's guys conducted themselves on Sunday night?
I mean, I thought they played great. I mean, I think, you know, the talk all week was how are we going to stop Odell Beckham and how is Odell Beckham going to, you know, be held, you know, in this game, or are we just going to let him eat? And, you know, it was like people were talking about the Jordan defense where it's like, you know, let him get his and then we'll just hope that the rest of us hope the rest of the players don't kill him. But, you know, pretty much after that Wilcox hit, that dude didn't really want to play anymore. And nope. and actually, I was really wondering whether he actually got cleared for concussion protocols because he didn't look right. I mean, he just didn't. If maybe it was his body language, and maybe he really was just scared, but he didn't look right after that, and he didn't play great before that either. And you have to attribute that to, you know, improvements made in the secondary. Obviously, the pass rush was a little bit better. I mean, Eli wants to get the ball out quick, but I thought the pass rush was getting pressure all night. They only got one sack, but like I said, Eli's not exactly the easiest guy to bring down. And I thought Sean Lee, you know, after kind of shaking off some rust, looked like Sean Lee by the you know, middle of the second quarter. I think overall the defense, you know, certainly played more consistently than the offense. I think they had one, you know, quote-unquote splash play, to quote Bob, on you know what kind of way to measure how good a job they did. They only had one play that was over 20 yards, which was the Jennings rush later in the game. You know, beyond that, I don't know really what you could have asked for. I mean, they had the 17 points were scored off the three turnovers that Dallas gave away. If you take away those 17 points, I mean, they basically, you know, they basically held them to less than 10 points on normal drives. So you can't really ask for much more than that. And the question is, you know, how are they going to do that against, you know, a team like Philly? But I have to say, you know, just through one performance, they did a pretty good job as far as my eye can see. What did you think?
I think the same thing. I think that, you know, I was struck during the game by, okay, sure, Bob McAdoo and the New York Giants offensive coaches want to, you know, feature a sort of short passing game. And I know that's part of the West Coast offense. But it also seemed like they were scheming to avoid the Cowboys' pass rush. Probably mm-hmm. a combination of the fact that they had a bunch of new offensive linemen and a rookie left tackle, et cetera, and also the fact that the Cowboys' pass rush looks quite a bit better this year than it did in recent years. So, you know, we can talk about, oh, we only got one sack. But, you know, that's because, you know, it seemed like priority one in the Giants coaches room, you know, in the offensive coaches room, was to do whatever they could in terms of the game plan to keep Eli protected. And they succeeded. But as a result, you know, there were never any slow developing plays where, you know, the kind of plays where Odell Beckham gets deep and can beat you, you know, can get over the top of its safety. I mean, none of that stuff ever had a remote chance to develop. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's part of, you know, the giant scheme. That's part of the fact that the Cowboys' pass rush is pretty good, if not very good. And I think a lot of the credit has to go to what you were talking about at the beginning, which is that the Cowboys' defensive backs played really well. And, you know, they all match up against Beckham and you know, the other receivers. And, you know, through mixing and matching, did pretty well. Like, everybody kind of acquitted themselves well against everybody. So and there's a lot of encouraging stuff. I really do.
Yeah, I think that the defense overall played really well, and I mean, it wasn't the most difficult challenge. I mean, obviously, just because they have some injuries on the offensive line, but you know, they still had some skill players that they had to cover, and they did a decent enough job. Larry Donnell didn't really get much. He had that one pass that I remember that Jones did a great job of breaking up on in mm-hmm. coverage, mm-hmm. And you know, Mo Claiborne. We've been saying it, man, but he played great last night. You know, he looked confident. He looked like, you know, there may have been one or two times when he wasn't fully ready to stick his nose into a tackle, but his coverage looked really good, and his confidence looked really good. His body language looked really good. So, you know, those are all great things, especially with Philly, with going into Philly next week. So that's all real positive stuff. All right, before we move on to Dave, one last thing, obviously special teams. You know, what were your thoughts overall with coverage teams, kicking, and how much fear was in your heart on a scale of 1 to 10 when Bailey had to line up for that game-winning extra point 33 yards out?
Okay. Those are good questions. I think, you know, many times we wouldn't talk about the special teams, but I think because of
the preseason, I think.
Yeah, they were exposed a little in the preseason. Yeah. But also, you know, we have our good friend Dwayne Harris, who mm-hmm. we know can be a threat, who's back there returning kicks and punts. So the Giants didn't get any kickoff yardage because Dan Bailey kicked every single kickoff out of the end zone, mm-hmm. and they only got 3 punt return yards because as soon as Dwayne Harris caught the ball, there were 2 or 4 or more Cowboys around him. So one game in the books, it's early, but the special teams looked very good. To answer your second question, I felt the same way with that extra point as I would if it was an extra point on the 1 or the 2 or whatever it normally is, because Dan Bailey's just so automatic, you know, inside of 40. It never even occurred to me that was a possibility.
Honestly. I was a little scared just because I wasn't focused on the fact that it was Dan Bailey kicking it as much as, oh, this is this weird new extra point thing. So we got, you know, it's not just a gimme extra point at the end of the game. So
yeah.
it kind of psyched me out a little bit.
Hey, there were 4 missed extra points this week in the NFL.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think there was 18 all of last year or something like that. So, I mean, obviously this could really play a major role in the season this year. So definitely something to keep an eye out. And I have to say, Rabble, now that they've done this, how much better does Dan Bailey's long-term contract look for the Cowboys? I think it looks a lot better, frankly, because it just gives you an automatic. So, all right, great. We need to bring Dave in, but before we do, Dave himself would be really upset if I didn't bring up Blogging the Boys. So bloggingtheboys.com is obviously the best place to go for all your Dallas Cowboys information. Rabble's right in there. Dave's right in there. OCC, all our great guys. Michael, everyone is right in there in great Cowboys articles every single day for all your regular season information, Eagles Week information, you know, trolling the nation, everything you need. bloggingtheboys.com is the spot to go. Make sure you follow them on Facebook, Blogging the Boys, and on Twitter, @BloggingTheBoys.
Change had much to say, but man, I still think them cats are crazy. They were asking if you were around, how you was, where you could be found. I told them you were living downtown, driving all the old men crazy.
Cowboys Nation, it is my succinct pleasure to welcome the fearless leader of Blogging the Boys, the great Dave Halpern, into the studio. Dave, welcome.
Hey, thanks for the welcome. Glad to be here.
So, Dave created Blogging the Boys way back in 2005 and quickly joined up with SB Nation, and in the process has grown BTB into one of the most read Cowboys sites on the planet. Our first order of business here is to thank Dave for providing a forum for all of us Cowboys junkies to talk, write, and read about our favorite team. I'll go to the well saying that BTB provides the best Cowboys analysis on the internet, and I believe, Dave, this is a credit to you. So thank you so much for allowing all of us this forum. We're happy to be a part of it, and I know I am, and I think I speak for Landon as well when I say I'm thrilled that you could join us today.
You do?
Uh-oh. Thanks a lot, guys. I mean, you know, I started it, but I've had so many people that have helped me out along the way. I mean, I can't even put a number on the number of guys who have written at that site or participated in different ways. And then, you know, it wouldn't be anything without all the people that come every day, read the articles, get into the comments, you know, have regular discussions, and basically become a giant Cowboy sports bar. So, you know, it's been a lot of different people involved, a lot of different people, you know, putting time and effort in. So I love it. It's a great thing, and I hope it just keeps on continue growing.
I think we all do. So let's talk some football. Well, we're going to talk about the offense, I think, a little bit more in depth in a moment. But so first, I'd like to discuss the unit that nobody's really talking about, but that kept the game close enough to win, and that's, of course, the defense. So what did you think of the quote-unquote new Cowboys defense's first meaningful effort? Who or what position groups did you think played well, and who do you think needs to step up?
Well, I think they actually played very well. I mean, it was obviously great to have Sean Lee back. I mean, he was led the team in tackles, patrolling the middle. They only had a couple of, times where they really started gashing us up the middle. And once you can keep that kind of in control, and they were, the new offense that Eli Manning then won starting last year, all predicated on the quick passing. So it's hard to get the pass rush and to get home with the pass rush. So you're not going to rack up a lot of sack totals anymore on Eli, because the whole idea is get the ball out quick, let your receivers do their thing. So, the 2 points on that is I thought that the defensive line still did a credible job of rushing the passer. I thought they were creating some havoc back there. They weren't allowing any opportunities if they wanted to go deep for him to sit back there and do that. And secondly, I thought that once you got the ball out and made the completion, the defense was really good about swarming to the ball, making sure tackled, didn't really let anybody get loose. So, just all around, it was a great effort. The linebackers, the rush, the secondary was covering very well. Everything worked basically on the defensive side of the ball until the very end when they kind of got gashed, and I don't know, they over-pursuing, missing a few tackles at the end of the game. But for the most part, you got to be really happy with what you saw.
So obviously, but by the nature of just what happened at the end of the game, the game's primary storyline is Tony Romo, and rightfully so, given his fourth quarter heroics. But what did you think of the game he had overall? And given that he's dedicated to getting better every day, what could he possibly improve on at this point?
Well, I don't think you really, it's a great thing. It's motivational to say get better every day, keep trying. Because you really, if you get complacent, then you start losing it. I don't know if there's much more that Tony Romo can improve on. I mean, I think at this age, he is what he is. Now, it's all about the people around him. And what happened to me in the first half of that game were people were dropping footballs. Aaron Williams dropped the football when we could have picked up a first down. That would have kept the drive along. Of course, the big one that Dez dropped down there, that was a problem. The running game, it started to get a little bit going, but it never really found its true rhythm. But, I remember plenty of games last year where it kind of was stalled at the beginning, but they just stuck with it. This time they got a little bit away from it, but Tony Romo turned to Lance Dunbar. He turned to the running backs much more and used them as short passes that are basically runs. People are like, where's the running game? Well, if I can toss a ball to a back, toss it to him 4 yards laterally, and he can pick me up 15, I'll take that any day of the week. I mean, that's really safe stuff. So I think that Tony played well. I think everything, when they were moving the football, problem was turnovers. Romo was a little bit off on a couple of passes. And normally, okay, that ball's incomplete. You forget about that pass totally. These ended up intercepted. Cole Beasley fumbled the football. We had drops. So all of those things kind of add together to stop any of the momentum he was putting together on the drive. But overall, I didn't really have any argument with his play. And then at the end of the game, he was fantastic.
I think he was interviewed on Sirius XM NFL Radio. Lance Dunbar was saying that Tony Romo was like preternaturally calm in the huddle. He was saying, I felt like it was training camp. He was so calm and everything. And I think that he's gotten to the point now where he's just like a total Zen master. And I think that that spread to the rest of the offense. You know, that demeanor was taken up by everybody, and they just kind of quietly went about their business and just marched right down.
Well, so, yeah, I mean, that's the maturity and experience. You know, that's what I'm talking about. I don't know if he can get any better. Maybe he can be leadership better. I don't even think that. I think he just is, you know, doing what he does, and now they've got a team around him that fits him very well, and he's just getting – and it's, thank God the rest of the world is finally waking up to what a good quarterback he is. You know, it's kind of was getting tiresome of Cowboys fans having to defend him all the time. Now people are really starting to realize how good he is.
They sure are. And if Giants fans aren't converted, they're not paying attention. So you talked about this a little bit earlier, Dave, but I wonder if you could expound on it a little bit more. You know, one of the, I think for a lot of us, one of the most eagerly anticipated aspects of Sunday night's action was the unveiling of the Cowboys' 2015 running game. You know, we all wondered, would they be able to run as effectively as they did last year? You know, was last year's success, was it the offensive line? Was it DeMarco Murray? So I know it's a small sample size, but what, if anything, did you learn about the running game on Sunday night?
Well, I mean, I don't know how much I learned that I didn't already suspect. And I've all along thought, probably not going to be as good as we were last year. Why? Because last year, just everything worked. You know, not every year are you going to produce a, you know, 1,800-yard rusher. You know, these things just don't happen all the time. It all fell into place for the Cowboys last year in their running game. That just happens to teams sometimes. You know, certain aspects of their game are fantastic 1 year, but then they start to revert more to their norm. Now, I still think it's going to be pretty good. It's not like I don't think that we're going to be able to run the ball. I do think we're going to be able to run the ball. And we didn't run it that poorly in this game. You know, people tend to think, oh, my gosh, we only had 81 yards or whatever it was on the ground. Well, like I said before, if you're picking up 15 yards by just dumping it off to your halfback, you're going to take that. I mean, that's easy money. And that's what they were getting. They were getting easy money on that. So when you add in those yards, I mean, when I look at a running game, basically I'm looking at anything handoff to a screen to a, you know, a bubble screen out on the edge to dumping off to your tailback, you know, 2 yards out in the flat. If all of that's producing yards, that's fine with me. I never thought that this group would be as good as last year. DeMarco Murray had a great year. He was fantastic. Everything fell together, so I've always thought it was going to regress back a little bit. But the newfound ability to use Lance Dunbar finally, you know, seems to have come into the offense. So I'm actually not that worried about it. I think we're going to be able to run the ball okay. But I also think we're going to start using, you know, more passing game as a run than much more than we did previously.
You know, real quick, one of the things I noticed in the second half on Sunday was that the Giants had been playing a sort of cover two shell for the better part of the game, for better part of the first half. And at some point in the second half, they started bringing a safety up. So if you want to know if the Giants thought the running game was working, I think their actions tell you all you need to know. Of course, then they went back to that shell late when they were protecting the lead. But, you know, throughout the third quarter, they were bringing a guy up. So that to me was indicative of the degree to which they felt they needed to do that. And so that to me is another promising sign.
Well, that kind of leads me perfectly to my next question, because when the chips were down and they began to trail by 10 points late in the second half, the Cowboys basically skewed the run game and went to the pass and moved the ball very effectively, even without Dez Bryant, who was hurt with a foot injury. What did you think about the Cowboys passing game last weekend with and without Dez Bryant?
Well, I mean, I was disappointed in it in the first half, basically, because like I spoke about before, guys were dropping balls, and they were dropping them like 2 times. And then, you know, we got down in the red zone there. We tried to get that one in Terrence Williams. It kind of got deflected, knocked out of there. You know, that. So we didn't cash that one in. And we ended, so, you know, there was, in the first half, it felt like we could have done more. And then, you know, of course, Romo was a little bit off the Witten, and that got tipped, and it was an interception. So, you know, all first half, you just couldn't find the rhythm. And I think, I mean, it's been pretty obvious that if you put Tony Romo in a hurry up kind of offense and basically give him control for a limited amount of time, he can really do things. And, you know, you saw that at the end of the game. And who did you see getting the big yard? Lance Dunbar. I mean, I think they really found something here that they like, and they're going to start exploiting more and more. I mean, I really, if by the end of the year, I think that Lance Dunbar is going to be thought of differently than he is, has been up to this point.
You know, it's fun. It's funny because that's one thing that Rabble and I were just talking about, was about how it's just nice for them to have a dangerous safety valve. You know, it's nice for them to be able to dump the ball off and get more than just 2 or 3 yards. Like, Lance Dunbar can actually do something with the ball. Cole Beasley can actually do something with the ball once they have it.
Right. So the big problem they have now going forward is obviously without Dez Bryant. You know, Dez took up a corner and a safety on every play. You know, rarely were they going to play him one-on-one. So now they don't have anybody yet that commands that. So that's going to free up a safety to either come more up to the box, or they could play, you know, the 2-deep safety and keep the shell going pretty well and not have to keep rolling to one side. So Terrence Williams is really going to have to, you know, he's going to have to shine. He's going to have to blossom some and become a weapon. And I think he has the skills to do it. You know, he has to be more consistent in his game. But he looks like he has the skills to do it, because they've got to be able to still create that down-the-field threat. You know, there's got to be some kind of credibility to that, or else they're just going to start bunching up on Cole Beasley, and they're going to start bunching up on Lance Dunbar, and they're just not going to let those things happen. But if you've got to have someone that can force him back a little bit. So to me, that's a really big thing I'm looking at going forward, is can someone step up and – obviously, I think it needs to be T-Will, step up and be that credible force to some extent. They'll never be Dez, but they have to create that doubt in the defense's mind.
So that leads perfectly into my next question. You know, I was going to talk a little bit more about that. So you've talked, about the fact that the Bryant injury impacts, you know, in some ways, the entire offense, and largely because there's an extra guy now who is usually doubling Dez, who's free to do other things. Is there anything besides, and I totally agree with you when you say that, I think that one of the things the Cowboys have to do in the next couple games is get some tape of Terrence Williams getting deep for offensive, or rather for opposing defensive coordinators to see. So just so the threat is there. You know, they need to spring him once or twice. And I think as long as the threat is there, they'll be okay. So besides Terrence Williams doing that, is there anything else you think they're going to try to do now to move the ball in Dez's absence?
Well, I mean, it'll be interesting to see. There's a lot of different ways you could go with this, right? You could try to see if you could actually spring the running game like you did last year, right? How much can you get done? And will that extra safety not staying back on Dez creep up? Will that stop that? So then can you go to the, you know, that short game that we were talking about? A lot of Lance Dunbar, a lot of screens, a lot of, you know, you get the running back to Cole Beasley. But, you know, will they try to get, like, a Gavin Escobar involved? Get him split out? You know, the guy seems to do okay out there. He just really doesn't get a lot of opportunities. And I'd really love to be in the tight end coaches meeting at the Cowboys Complex for a week, just to find out what's going on there, because, you know, he caught the touchdown. He's done it before. He can get open. You know, if they use him out in the slot some and everything, he may be a tough cover. Maybe a little bit too big for the corners, a little bit too fast or too shifty for safeties, linebackers. Maybe he could help out. That would be an interesting strategy for me, and one I'd definitely try out if I was the Cowboys. I'd try to see what I could get done with him, you know, out of the inline tight end role, or they could start him from there too, but move him out to the slot some or in the backfield, different places, see if he can help you out.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys both saw the Eagles Falcons game, but I'm assuming you did. But you know, what they did to kind of beat the Eagles defense early was to kind of tighten everybody up and then they would run the wide zone, and then they would counter it with a backside slant to it wasn't Roddy White, I think it was Julio Jones who got most of it, actually. Mm-hmm. And they kept on beating them with that speed slant, you know, just kind of, and then eventually, you know, Philly had to drop Connor Barwin to just try to jump into the passing lane to stop it because they couldn't figure it out. I kind of think that might be a good role for Escobar this week, because what it would provide you is he'd be closer into the formation but still split out. He can run that route and win because of his size. He can just body whatever corner. As long as he gets in inside leverage, he can catch the ball and then fall forward for at least 4 or 5 yards at the very least. And then also could allow him the opportunity to get some crackback blocks if they decide to run a sweep outside. But that's the kind of thing that, you know, with Escobar that's really great is that since he can do some slot stuff, he can do some split stuff, but he can also do kind of that tight Antonio Gates, you know, tight end split stuff as well. You know, you can move him around as kind of a chess piece to as a blocker or as a receiver and maybe take advantage of some of the slowness to the perimeter that the Eagles might have.
I'd actually like to play devil's advocate for just a second. You know, so you were talking about the way that the Falcons bunch things in tight, and it occurs to me that another way to create space, if you can't create vertical fear.
Oh yeah, right? No, I know where you're going.
Is to play horizontal.
Absolutely. Those stacked
53 yards across the field.
Those stacked bubble screens.
Eagles play football.
Yeah,
that's right. That's right.
Well, even as the Cowboys were, we saw it against New York where they were doing those stacked bubble screens, right? Where they were swinging them out to the and then the receiver who was on the line would just basically act as a lead blocker. I think what happens is basically the offense needs to find a way to get the Eagles defense in a race to the perimeter with our offensive linemen, because if we try to just load up and go at them, I mean, it's a big group. All three of the down linemen are monsters. I think our best opportunity is to try to run the wide zone, which is what we're good at anyways, get these guys on the move and then pick our seams or find ways to bunch them out in all inside the box and then race them out to the outside that way. Because I think if you try to just run at them directly without any kind of way of stretching them horizontally, you're going to be running into a brick wall. And that's just my 2 cents or $20, however you want to say it, Rabble. But to move on, the injury bug has hit the team that went relatively unscathed in 2014. We noted above, the Cowboys will be without Dez Bryant's services for the foreseeable future. And they will also be without Orlando Scandrick, who's out for the season, Randy Gregory, and Ron Leary for a couple weeks. Not to mention the suspended Greg Hardy and Rolando McClain. What is the outlook for the next several games, all of which look tough, and all of which will be without these players unless injury statuses change?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is the NFL. This is the way I always do it. This is the NFL. Nobody wants to hear about your injury.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ask Green Bay about Jordy Nelson. Mm-hmm. You know, ask the Ravens about Terrell Suggs. You know, nobody wants to hear about your injury problems. In the NFL, you've got to have enough depth. You've got to have guys that can step up and fill the role, or you're just not going to be a champion. You know, you're just not going to get there. So, in some ways, it's almost like this is inevitable. These things are going to happen. Is your team strong enough? Does it have enough depth to overcome it? That's who wins in the NFL, you know. It's kind of the war of attrition, and we're just hitting it early.
Mm-hmm.
But in specific cases, you know, with Randy Gregory, that one, that's a real bummer because that guy looks really good.
He does.
When you look at him in preseason, and even when you look at him early in that game, man, when he beat Flowers around the corner on that one play, I mean, you were just like, wow, that's real body control, you know, just to be fast enough to get out the field, but then to bend and turn that corner and beat that guy. And he's just, I mean, I saw a couple of different plays in there where he was, you know, causing havoc in the backfield. He really looks like he's going to be a player. So it's
That illegal formation penalty on Flowers was all about Randy Gregory. It was all about him trying to line up back so he could stop
Gregory.
Already
in his head. Mm-hmm. You know, they're already in their head, you know, thinking about him. So that one, boy, you know, that's a drag. But at least he'll be back. You know, we're waiting on Greg Hardy. That will obviously strengthen us. Can we get through this stretch? I mean, it's hard to say, right? What can you say? You got to watch it and see it happen. Mm-hmm. You can say, well, we can play this guy. Maybe this is, you know, this guy. Maybe Mincy will become alive. Or maybe Ryan Russell will jump in and do something, or, you know. But in the NFL, everybody's got their injuries. You just got to suck it up and get through it. I mean, look at the Giants. They were without Cruz. They were without Beeson. They almost beat them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's getting it done. That's what the Cowboys have to do. I mean, it's cliche, but it's the next guy up, and he's got to be able to play. You know, thank goodness we have Anthony Hitchens, who can play for Rolando McClain, you know. And thank goodness we had Randy Gregory, who was filling in kind of Greg Hardy role, you know. So, I don't know. You can ask me how much the injuries are going to play into it. Of course, you're going to play into it, but everybody's, you know, ended up injured. You just got to play through it. That's all, really. I mean, you got to step up next man up.
And I think they're better equipped to do that this year than any year that I can remember in recent memory.
I agree.
You just got to have the depth. And
that's
they
right.
seem to have depth this
That's
time.
That's right. That's right. And speaking of depth, Blogging the Boys has depth in terms of its writing staff. And that's all about Dave. So listen, everybody, follow Dave and his fine work on BTB and the great crew he's assembled there. Dave, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Please come back and join us again sometime later in the season and talk some more Cowboys football, will you?
You know I will. Anytime you guys want me, just give me a call. I'll be on. And, you know, let's go. Let's go beat the Eagles.
All right.
And we didn't even talk about DeMarco Murray. That was amazing.
Who?
Well, we figured everybody else is doing that for us at this point.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
Thanks, Dave.
All right. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Bye. Well, no surprise, but that was great stuff with Dave. It's always great to talk to the originator, the founding father of Blogging the Boys.
There's a reason he's our fearless leader. But okay, now it's finally time to get into the nitty-gritty with the Eagles. So let's bring in Brandon and talk about our bitter, hated rivals. We would like to welcome Brandon Lee Gowton from Bleeding Green Nation. Welcome, Brandon.
Hey, how's it going? Glad to be here.
Great. Thank you so much for coming on. Brandon is the manager and editor-in-chief in Bleeding Green Nation, SB Nation's Philadelphia Eagles site. His writing has been published in the annual Eagles Almanac, and he appears on the weekly BGN's Eagles podcast, BGN Radio, which makes sense. So he should be poised to deliver some excellent on-air content. In addition, he also contributes to SB Nation's Philadelphia 76ers site, Liberty Ballers. So welcome again, Brandon. And let's begin by talking about the Eagles' tumultuous offseason. It seems like Chip Kelly and his moves were constantly in the news. We know the general tenor. He took over personnel, jettisoned a lot of the Andy Reid guys, and began to remake the team to his liking. What is your personal take on the roster changes he wrought?
Well, I think, you know, he looked at this Eagles team at the end of 2014, and he saw a team that just wasn't good enough. They were good. They had won 10 games for the second year in a row, but they didn't make the playoffs. They clearly weren't going anywhere, even if they did make the playoffs, probably, you know, because Mark Sanchez is at the helm, and it's not like they're about to make a deep run with Mark Sanchez or anything. And obviously, Nick Foles led the NFL in turnovers before he got hurt. And Foles has, you know, and he's kind of injury prone. He hasn't missed an extensive amount of time, but he's been hurt in all three of his seasons so far. So there's some issues there. I really think he saw this roster and he just said, you know, we can do better, or I want to try, at least try to do better. So I think the MO behind all of these moves was really trying to take a roster that was just good and really shoot for the moon here. And if it didn't work out, and if it doesn't work out, I think he can live with that. I think it's really just, you know, trying to swing for the fences here.
So I'm going to start my question by mangling a proverb, right? the proof of the offseason is in the game one pudding. So, you know, you were just talking about he's trying to make a team that's better. So obviously the sample size is small, right? Mm-hmm. One game. And but let's talk about, you know, early returns. So what happened mm-hmm. against the Eagles on Monday night? Excuse me. What happened against the Falcons on Monday night? And what did it tell you about Chip Kelly's new look Eagles?
I think one of the things that you took away was that they didn't look a lot different from the Eagles of old, meaning last year there were too many big plays, quarterback play, obviously a couple of turnovers there. The run game wasn't where it needed to be. Offensive line was an issue. I already mentioned that the secondary gave up big plays. So, you know, earlier returns are not good. But, you know, part of the issue with this is I feel like, you know, you bring in all these new guys. It's just going to take some time to gel. It really is. I mean, you saw it with Sam Bradford and the wide receivers. He threw to Zach Ertz once. Mm-hmm. Ball wasn't where it was supposed to be. There was a play where Josh Huff was blocking on the outside when he should have been running a fade route instead. I mean, the timing just clearly isn't there yet. And, you know, that's kind of to be expected. Bradford's only had one offseason with the team, and he was a little bit limited in OTA, so he didn't really have the full spring even to get in there and kind of work all those kinks out. I really think there's a chance, you know, this thing kind of develops over the course of the season.
So I'd like to turn to the upcoming game against the Cowboys, and we have a sense of how Kelly wants to run the offense, but we're less certain about how he wants to deploy the new weapons he's amassed. So how is his offense different than the one we saw in 2014, and how do you anticipate Chip will attack the Cowboys?
Well, I think the goal is to run the football. I mean, that's, you know, that they signed DeMarco Murray, a guy Cowboys fans might know.
Who?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That guy.
We know that guy.
They signed Ryan Matthews. They still have Darren Sproles, obviously. Mm-hmm. So those, you know, those are huge weapons, and I think that's really the goal here is to run the football. I think this run game makes or breaks this Eagles team. I think last year the run game made the Cowboys. I mean, it's really about running the football here. I think the Eagles and Cowboys are very similar in that way. I don't think they want Sam Bradford throwing 50-plus times a game like he did against the Falcons. I don't think the Cowboys really want Tony Romo doing that either. I think, you know, they want to be able to run the ball and take the ball out of his hand to a certain extent and really use the run to open up the passing game. I think that kind of where it went wrong against the Falcons is that they weren't able to run early, and then the Falcons were content with playing deep. So the passing game was kind of open underneath, and they just consistently kept taking what was in front of them. And that really worked in the second half. I mean, obviously not so good in the first half when we scored 3 points, but they came back in the second half, scored 21 or so. So, you know, I really think running the ball is the big thing here. The only question mark is, you know, are the guards good enough? Is the offensive line as a whole good enough to run the ball behind? Because it clearly was not in week one.
That was actually where I was going. You know, do you think the guards are good enough? Or is this something that it makes you a little anxious?
Yeah, it's definitely a big concern. I genuinely think, you know, guard is not one of the most important positions on offense. But, I mean, you have to have it to the level where, you know, obviously they're functional. And I think you saw that more so in the second half. I think, you know, you look at the Eagles right guard, Andrew Gardner, especially him, he kind of really settled in the second half there, and the running game picked up a tiny bit. Not, you know, not to an elite level, but it picked up. So, you know, there's some issues there to work out. I think they can get by with these guys, especially because you have, while you have question marks at guard, you have great talent at left tackle with Jason Peters, Jason Kelsey, one of the better centers in the league, and right tackle at Lane Johnson. So I think they can make this thing work.
You know, I'm sorry to keep asking about the offensive line, but can you tell us a little bit more about Lane Johnson? I feel like in many ways he's the guy we don't hear that much about. How, you know, he was such a high, like top five draft pick. He's such an athletic guy. How is he playing it? And is he like, is he flashing the kind of ability that merits the kind of pick they spent on him?
I would say so. I think, you know, it's the fact that maybe you don't hear about him a lot is a good thing. I think, you know, this isn't a guy who's like, oh, you know, he's getting beat consistently or he's failing to really get out there. I think he's really, in year three, he's really kind of just a guy that you don't even think about, kind of like with Jason Peters at this point. You know, the Eagles coaches are very high on Johnson. I know they've said they view him as a left tackle. I think he's going to be the left tackle once Jason Peters retires. You know, Lane Johnson's a really athletic offensive lineman, really a freak guy. Really in his rookie year, you saw his potential as a run blocker, but pass protection was a big issue. Last year was kind of a down year because he got that 4-game suspension, and then he was thrown into the fire right away in week 5, and you could tell he was rusty. So it took some time to pick up, but I think he finished the season strong. And going into year 3 here, I think, you know, he's a guy you set it and forget it.
That's a nice thing to have. Okay, so let's talk about the defense now. How is Billy Davis going to deploy his new chess pieces? And how do you think Philly, sort of generally, and then how do you think Philly plans on defending a Cowboys offense that is without last year's dominant skill position players in Murray and Bryant?
Yeah, it's weird because last year, you know, I pretty much knew what the Eagles were going to do against this Cowboys defense. I mean, you saw it on Thanksgiving, especially like the goal there was to stop the run. And then, you know, because then that's going to limit what the Eagles, or the Cowboys rather, can do in the passing attack. And that's exactly what happened on Thanksgiving. But then you look at that, the game where the Eagles lost later in the year in December, and the Eagles contained the run in that game. But you know, obviously the passing attack was just a major issue for them. Bradley Fletcher was getting burned by Dez right and left there. So, you know, this year it's a little weird because, you know, Dez is going to be out. I don't really know what the Cowboys are going to do to game plan around that. I mean, you don't really have a guy there replacing him that you're kind of like keying in on like you would Dez. I imagine the Cowboys are going to try to run the ball a decent amount still. It's really a question mark for me. But from the Eagles' perspective, I think, you know, they got Byron Maxwell. He obviously struggled against Julio Jones. Not a good first showing there. But the safeties are a big improvement what the Eagles had last year, and I think that's a big difference there in the back end. Malcolm Jenkins is still around, but they added Walter Thurman, and he looks like, you know, he's a guy with ball skills, and he can make a play there. So, you know, the thinking is X plays in theory should be limited. It's really up to Byron Maxwell now, who had a rough game, to step up.
All right, so the first time we preview a game with any division opponent this season, we want to include this segment that we're calling Renewing the Rivalry, in which we share our thoughts on memorable games, great plays, and favorite/hated players in that respective rivalry. You game for that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what's their most memorable game between these two teams, personally?
I think, it's really recent, but just... it's one that really sticks out because I was there. It was the 2013. It wasn't even just the game where the Eagles won the division. It was the game leading up to that, even where the Eagles had a game against the Bears that night, and because the Cowboys had beaten Washington late in the game earlier that day, it was a meaningless game for the Eagles. Like, it didn't mean anything if they won. They still had to beat the Cowboys in week 17 to win the division. So it was just kind of like a weird feeling because the Eagles didn't really have any benefit of playing that game, but they still played their starters. They killed the Bears. The whole crowd was chanting, "We want Dallas." You just knew the Eagles were going to win in that division finale. And then, of course, Brandon Boykin picks off Kyle Orton to steal the game. I mean, that's one that really sticks out in recent memory, especially.
I was actually at that game too, and it was definitely, I went in expecting to lose, and had, again, no surprise to a Cowboys fan, my heart broken when we got so close, and then, you know, of course, Orton gave it away. Okay, so biggest plays from the series, or your most memorable big play from the series?
Oh man, there's a lot of them.
Or you could do what you think, you know, the universal historical biggest play in the rivalry.
Man, that's a really good question. I can't even, it's funny. Like, one doesn't even stick out to mind. I think of the Giants. I think of DeSean Jackson's punt return. I think of, the Redskins. I think of Michael Vick's 6-touchdown game. You know, it's weird. I think that's kind of a thing here with the Eagles-Cowboys rivalry. I feel like in recent years, it really hasn't been up to snuff. I mean, you look back in 2013, we just talked about it. You know, Kyle Orton was playing in the finale. Like, that's kind of lame. The game earlier in the year, that was at Lincoln Financial Field, that was a terrible game from both sides. Both sides played terrible. It was a really ugly game. Nick Foles was totally hurt. Matt Barkley had to play last year.
End of sentence, yeah.
Yes.
Matt Barkley had to play.
Yes. Yeah. Last year was lopsided. I mean, it was the Eagles killing the Cowboys on Thanksgiving, and then it was the Cowboys killing the Eagles to win the division pretty much. And so it's like, it's weird. It's almost like this rivalry has been, it hasn't been as even or heated as you think it would be or you would want it to be.
Okay, so last one. Most hated Cowboys, and which Cowboy do you respect?
You know, that's another funny thing. I have answers this time, but the funny thing here is it's like the Cowboys to Eagles fans, it's almost just like it's the entity. It's not even the player. It's the entity of the Dallas Cowboys, I think, that gets hated the most. But that said, I think one player who was always, it's kind of like a funny hate thing, is Marion Barber. I have to pick Marion Barber.
Wow, okay.
Because it was just like, it was just funny. Like, this is a guy who would come in on third and one, and he'd pick up like the yard, and he would just like excessively celebrate getting a yard. It was just like the most ridiculous thing. It was like, it was funny, but it was just like, who is this guy? It's like, come on, like, you can't like over celebrate running for a yard.
And the other half of that is any Cowboys that you actually will begrudgingly give respect to.
I mean, you have to give props to Dez Bryant. I mean, he's great. And you know what's funny is I think Chip Kelly would love to have him. Not just because he's talented. I mean, any coach would love to have that talent, obviously. But I think Dez Bryant really loves football. And I think, you know, Chip Kelly, he's had a big emphasis, you know, on that. Like, you know, he gets rid of DeSean Jackson because I think DeSean Jackson was a guy who maybe didn't love the game as much as he loved the things the game gets him. I don't think Dez Bryant is like that. I think Dez Bryant loves football, and I think Chip Kelly would love to have him. So I think you got to respect Dez.
That's a thing that Garrett preaches all the time too, yeah, actually. Absolutely. You know, guys who love the sport. You know
it's actually kind of eerie how similar those two guys are. I mean, I know they're philosophically a little bit different, but in terms of a lot of what they believe in terms of the locker room.
Single-mindedness.
Yeah, they're very, very similar.
Yeah.
So hey, Landon.
Yes, sir?
What are your most memorable Eagles-Cowboys face-offs?
Wow. I mean, I think that, you know, that playoff game, the last playoff game versus McNabb.
At the end of 2009.
Yeah, that was pretty good. And I should preface this by saying that my least favorite Eagle of all time, without a doubt, is Donovan McNabb. Like, I've always hated Donovan McNabb. And I do concur that I think that it is more of an entity thing than so much normally hating all the players and the Eagles. You know, like, it's not so much like that. If I had to pick a player to respect, I would pick Brian Dawkins. Brian Dawkins, just because. I mean, he was just fantastic, and it was so hard gearing up to play against that guy, and whenever the defense come out and they'd sing the Fly Eagles Fly, it's just like, God, I hate Dawkins, but I respect the hell out of you. Biggest play from the series, man, I mean, probably one of those Dez touchdowns over Fletcher. just because, like, it's fresh in the memory, but yeah, I mean, it really is hard because maybe my favorite Eagles Cowboys moment is actually a post game interview when Jimmy Johnson is talking about how he chased Buddy Ryan's fat ass off the field after the Bounty Bowl. That was a pretty good moment. What about you, Rabble? Do you got some answers on this?
Well, you know, this does go back. I think what Brandon was saying about the rivalry is losing a little bit of its luster of late because there haven't been a lot of years where both teams were really good.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, in some ways, last year's December and November games brought a little bit of that back. But you know, through the early 2000s, the Cowboys are awful, and the Eagles, I think the Eagles are the best team in the NFC for about 3 or 4 years in a row there.
Yeah.
And the games weren't remotely competitive. And then the Eagles kind of went downhill where the Cowboys came up. And it just haven't had those kind of like late season, you know, nail biters. So my most memorable games tend to be from the 90s, probably. Those, like, those playoff games in the 90s, you know, the one in 92, it probably would have been January 93, where the Eagles came in and the Cowboys, you know, had been getting their butts kicked by him for a long time. That 91 game at the end of the 91 season where Kelvin Martin with the long punt return, because, you know, the Eagles had just dominated the Cowboys earlier that season and gotten like 11, 12 sacks on Romo. I think the biggest plays tend to come from those kind of games. Although I will say that the 2005 game in Philadelphia, when the Cowboys were getting their – I mean, just crushed, mm-hmm. crushed. And then somehow the Dallas eked out a touchdown, you know, long past a Peerless Price set it up or something bizarre like that. And then Roy Williams picked off McNabb with hardly any time left off and returned it for a touchdown, and McNabb got hurt. That was a pretty awesome play if you're a Cowboy fan.
I mean, how did Roy Williams ever pick off a pass? I mean, he must have ran up and handed it to him.
Yeah, that was one of the very few great plays Roy Williams ever made. Yeah. There wasn't like a tackle.
In the NFL, yeah.
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 You know, I agree with you guys 100% about the entity. You know, there are guys on the Redskins I despise, like Joe Theismann. If I saw Joe Theismann in the street right now, I'd have to cross the street and go hit him.
That's spit space, yeah.
You know, Brandon Jacobs would kill me, but I'd still run up behind him and get in a shot.
I'd kneecap him or something, you know, I'd find a way.
McNabb was kind of a clown, and I never liked Bill Berge particularly, but like, I just hate that, you know, it's the entity, you know, it's the rivalry more so than the players, you know, because like, am I going to hate Reggie White, really? How can you hate Jerome Brown? I mean, he kicked our butt, but the guy was awesome. How can you hate him, you know? Yeah. He wasn't a jerk. So
yeah, exactly.
So those are my takes, basically.
And do you respect those guys? Or are you listing those as your respect guys, too?
Yeah, I mean, you got to respect those guys. I agree with you. You got to respect Dawkins. You know, you got to respect the way he played the game, the way he conducted himself.
Absolutely.
Really. Okay, so, Brandon, final question here. We're going to put you on the spot. What's your prediction for Sunday? Who wins and why?
Well, the Eagles are coming into this one as 5.5-point favorites. You know, I think the line will change, but you know, it's pretty substantial. And I think, you know, a lot of that has to do with Dez being out. You guys also have Leary out. I think you have
I think so. We're not sure yet, but probably
Gregory. Obviously, McLean and Hardy are still suspended. So I think with all the losses and everything, and the Eagles, you know, looking good in the second half, and you know, this is their home opener. I have to give it to the Eagles here. I think it's Eagles 30. It's close, so Cowboys 26.
Okay,
I think. Is this a nail biting like last team that has the ball wins kind of game?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, I would say yeah.
Okay. Awesome.
Well, that's you know how these things always should end, frankly, and it's always going to be one of these battles all the way to the end, and somebody's going to be left crying at the end. So, best of luck to you and everyone on Eagles. Even though I don't really mean that, but make sure you guys follow Brandon and his site Bleeding Green Nation, which really is a fantastic site. I go all the time to get information, and it's super helpful. So make sure you're checking them out, bleedinggreennation.com, and make sure you follow Brandon on Twitter at Brandon Gowton. That's at BrandonGowton. Brandon, thank you so much for coming on, and please come back and see us next time we decide to beat the Eagles.
Okay, we'll see. I guess week 9, I guess we'll
be. That's right. So we'll circle back then and see how things are going.
Okay. And hopefully we'll be talking about how you're going to be trying to stop Dez, because Dez will be back by then.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
All right. Thanks, Brandon. We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot, man.
Well, another one in the books, Rabble. What do we got next week?
Well, we're going to be able to celebrate the fact that the Cowboys have a 2-game lead over the Eagles with the great Joey Ikes, who's going to join us to go deep into the Cowboys-Eagles game. And then we'll talk about the new-look Dirty Birds with Jenna Thomas from The Falcoholic, the SB Nation Atlanta Falcons site.
I love that name. Before we go, I want to talk about our own SB Nation site, Blogging the Boys. Make sure you're checking them out for all your Cowboys information. Go there after the games, during the games, so the thread is always, always so much fun. Make sure you're checking that out. And, of course, check out their Facebook page, Blogging the Boys, and their Twitter, at Blogging the Boys. And until next week, go Cowboys, and happy trails, y'all.
Happy trails.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds when we're together?
Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather. happy trails.